Welcome to the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel. I'm Joe Cook. We got Evan Veith. We just got finished talking to Texas coordinators, Texas assistant coaches, and even some assistant coaches who, with some of the new rules, are able to be on the field, got their opportunity with the media. We'll go over some of the big takeaways we had from speaking with them, but make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Going to be a lot of great stuff on here over the next couple of days. Practice starts tomorrow. They're putting helmets on. They're heading to the Denny's Fields. Going to be a lot of fun tracking that. We'll have clips from practice on here. We'll have instant reactions. Going to be a great couple of days covering the real start of the season for us. But the real start of the season for a lot of y'all is not for another, I think, 32 days. So make sure before then you go by Thinking Texas Football from Paul Wadlington. We got the link in the description. Every player, every position, every opponent, every team in the SEC, and plus a look at the college football landscape and a look at the 2025 class. A lot of those guys were mentioned today by coordinators, so you're going to want to know more about them as well. Go find that Thinking Texas Football link in the description. Evan, this is one of my favorite days of the year. It's hectic. You get a lot of good data. You get to talk to some coaches who, because of Steve Sarkisian's program preference, you don't get to talk to maybe until bowl season. They're pretty candid. They give some good info. Sometimes they talk around stuff because they know they don't want the message to be any different from what Sark says. But you may get some good tidbits here and there, and I feel like we got a lot of that today.
Yeah, it's probably a six-month wait until we're going to talk to most, even the guys like PK and Flood, that you're going to talk to them again. So that's why it's kind of the unofficial start of the year, because you're talking to actual human beings about the roster instead of just looking online or looking at sources about what's being said. But it was a lot of fun. Those first three that we got, it was Kwiatkowski and then Banks and then Flood. Kind of got you that general idea of how they're feeling about the offense, defense, special teams. And then, of course, we got to talk to some of these guys, you know, like Kenodo Hudson, who's the Nichols coach. Talk to Bamonte, who's doing a lot of that kind of game coordination, the back end stuff when you're actually in there and on the field on Saturday. It's a lot of fun to just be able to kind of pick the brains of people who you aren't going to get to talk to much for the rest of the season.
Let's start at the top. For the, fifth straight year, offensive coordinator is Kyle Flood. Defensive coordinator is Pete Kwiatkowski. Special teams coordinator is Jeff Banks. You get to talk to them as coordinators, of course, but then you also get to hear about their positions. Let's go ahead and start with Flood. What was a big takeaway, whether Flood the O-line coach, Flood the offensive coordinator, that stood out to you?
Well, I think just in general with all three of them, some people were asking just about like what this continuity was like for that specific part of the staff, those three guys who've been there pretty much since Alabama days. And Flood was talking about just how much of a great personal relationship he has with Coach Sarkisian, and just more than football, what he is able to bring to Flood's life and how it impacts on the other side of things, back into the football side of things. So, of course, he talked about, you know, replacing four starters. But the big thing that I keyed in on is, it seems like at tackle and at center, they're fairly confident with where they are depth-wise. You mentioned Andre Kodjo a few times. Even if he's not going to start over Brandon Baker, it seems like there's some confidence in him being able to play both sides. It's something that Flood really encourages from his tackles, to play both left and right. And then, of course, Connor Robertson was never going to be a question mark as the backup center. But that guard play is still something that he's kind of skating around when talking about it. It was asked what the backup guards look like. And more than anything, he kind of just named three names: Kibble, Chapman, and Stroh. Didn't give a definitive, hey, this guy's emerging ahead of the others. That's maybe something we see in fall camp, but something I'm a little nervous about. If one of the left or right guards goes down, what's going to happen in this offensive line? And maybe right now there isn't a solution that they need to find out as we get closer to Ohio State.
Yeah, and one of the things is I think there's a lot of faith in DJ Campbell. Took some big steps as a leader during the spring, during the summer. All he really said about Neto Umeozulu was he had his best spring in his Texas career, and that is a positive, of course. But we didn't hear much else about him. And then kind of like you joked with Ian Boyd, who was there, well, you're naming guys, but you're not naming one guy. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is what took place. Who knows? He did mention Robertson. Maybe Robertson is good enough to move Cole Hudson out to guard. And maybe that's what it looks like. That's a possibility we're going to track. But you feel good about Trevor Goosby. And he said a lot about Trevor Goosby, what he needs to work on, the value that those reps in the big-time games, A&M, Georgia, Clemson, I guess it'd be Arizona State, that provided to him. And you can't replace Kellen Banks, but in stepping in for his role. What you mentioned about Kodjo, Brandon Baker, seems like they like the progress that they made throughout the summer, throughout the spring. Still has some work to do in camp, But of course, you know, that's what camp is for. As an offensive coordinator, what were some of the things that, even though he doesn't call plays, hearing Flood kind of informed your thoughts on?
Well, everything with the coordinator kind of ties back into what the offensive line does with the rest of the position group. So running back was definitely a topic that was talked about a lot because of the injuries that have come in the past year, Baxter and Clark. And he definitely made sure to note about the kinds of runs that he likes to do. Our own Ian Boyd did ask about the outside zone, how it kind of was what was relied on. And Flood said, hey, every year since I've been going back with Sarkisian, eventually something will unfold that, you know, whether it's you're doing a lot of duo, whether you're running inside or outside zone, a gap scheme, which is something we might see them do a lot this year. They don't know yet. It's kind of what Flood was saying. It's just going to emerge. It's not like one running back is going to dictate what happens throughout the whole season, but he definitely sounds more confident in this room because, of course, you're not only relying on two guys, one of which is pretty fumble heavy from Jaden Blue last year. It's not just Wisner to end the year. And of course, there's so much positive said about Trey Wisner, but also, hey, we're getting CJ Baxter back. Christian Clark can do more. Jared Gibson's got another year. I don't think he specifically mentioned those latter two, but he talked a lot about Baxter. And so that's good to hear that if they're talking about Baxter, it means that he is giving them a reason to talk to them, for them to talk about him.
He gave some insight on Arch Manning too, just about how, you know, he is stepping up, and they really, and you'll hear coaches say this, like, they don't want to say like, we're changing everything. Like that's just not their thing. But I think Flood was pretty honest about how what they may change about running with Arch a little bit, not majoring in it, but being able to utilize those legs, and just running in general. Like you said, they may prefer a certain type of, you know, run scheme, but that doesn't mean they're going to throw all the other ones out. We'll probably see a lot of versatility from that. Moving on, we'll stay on offense and kind of move to special teams. Jeff Banks spoke. And that is someone who, not under fire, not at all, but special teams lacked last year. And he was very honest about it. There's a lot of different reasons why. But I think the answer to one of your questions was one of the big things from Jeff Banks that kind of instructs what they may be looking for from the non-specialist part of special teams this year.
Yeah, I wrote that article yesterday about three questions you'd have for Jeff Banks. I actually got to ask one of them was just, how are you picking out freshmen? What are you looking for in your true freshmen when you aren't familiar with these guys? It's not as much your job to recruit them. They come into camp. What are you trying to find to put them on special teams? And he immediately answers speed. That's the number one thing. You got to be fast, especially kind of insinuating fast for your size. And he mentioned that these guys who are like 6'3", 6'4", 230, that's the sweet spot. That's where he wants. So, of course, he's going to favor his tight ends in special teams. That's the guys he works with closely. But he mentioned Nick Townsend as particularly a really good athlete on that. Lance Jackson, Grayson Littleton, those are the main three. I think Bo Barnes is also mentioned as guys who are just fast for what they for what they're bringing to this team. And Jackson at 275, or now he's probably down to about 260, is really, really athletic. And same with Littleton. And then also he needs to be able to trust these guys. That was the second kind of component to it: speed and trust. Can I make sure you're not going to be the guy who's holding on a play that would be a 30-yard return either way, even if you're not holding? And more than that, because that was a problem with this team last year, the penalties. He's diagnosed three things. It was executing on the kicking game, not too many penalties, and getting returns. And that's something that also punting as well, something that they need to be good about. And I think this true freshman group is so cerebral that they're going to find some guys who aren't just athletes, but you can trust in. And yeah, the four he named were the ones that really stood out as guys who were going to actually contribute this year on special teams.
The specialist part of it, I think he was honest in that they wanted a lot of those guys back, but at the same time, they said, look, we are going to go try to find upgrades. And he was also honest about how some of the offensive struggles that put Burt Auburn in a position to where he's kicking 45-yarders, something I think everybody knew before the season started wasn't his best and strongest suit, but you're not going to just leave those points, you know, on the field. You're going to try and get them. He put them in those situations, and Burt didn't come through, and then Burt started to not succeed in other situations. They go and get Shipley, and that applies even to the rest of the specialists with Jack Bomeister coming in and you know, kind of taking Michael Kern's spot. He talked about how these are mature players. You know, they have their accolades, whether it be in the Sun Belt or in the Big 12, and you can coach them a little differently, and you can expect different things from them. And it sounds like they still expect big things from those players, Bomeister and Shipley. They expect to be able to convert maybe from distance a little more. I mean, Shipley has a 60-yarder to his name. And they, you know, they expect these types of players to, because of that experience, because of the effort that they put in to bring them in, and because of the loss, you know, from a roster and a multi-year, you know, player perspective that they had, that they're going to make up for that loss and do more than that. So a lot of expectation there. Kind of touched on return, mentioned Wisner, Niblett, and I think one more. DeAndre Moore. There you go. As guys factoring into the return game. Also mentioned Grayson Littleton, who we're going to hear a lot about. And then at tight end, you know, he sounds like he's really high on Jack Hendry's. Like he's someone who may not have that big bruising size, but as part of a very versatile room, he's excited for what Hendry's brings from Cal.
Yeah, and one thing that I also added to the end of that article was, you know, did two special teams things and one tight end thing was, what is Jordan Washington going to be for this team this year? Because you exit the season, you know Helm's going to the NFL, and hey, he hasn't started a game, hasn't caught a pass, but he was seen as the starter. He was going to be the next guy. Same with Spencer Shannon. It's kind of that number two. And then from what Coach Banks said is that they talked to the players beforehand and said, hey, we're going to bring in someone else. This didn't come as a blindside to the tight end room that Andrews is coming in. Yeah. They shouldn't know who specifically it was. And apparently that they were fully bought into that idea and they were great leaders around Andrews and welcomed him in when he came in as still a recruit transfer portal guy. And Andrews was able to kind of mesh in himself and then turn into a leader within, I don't know, a week. It sounded like it was pretty quick with him, but from what it sounds like Banks is saying is that this whole entire room was pretty supportive of this move. And that's a good thing to hear from Washington. And he sounds very confident what Washington can be as the two, as a kind of blocking forward guy and also a red zone threat. I think 12 personnel is going to be something you see a decent bit in the red zone because you have two specifically really strong receivers on the outside. And then Washington and Andrews are going to be hard to cover in the red zone. And if he's playing at 270, but still has that catch radius, which is the exact wording that Banks uses, that his ability to have a high catch radius, that's a really hard guy to cover up over the middle of the field and an asset Texas can have. So I'm feeling more confident about Washington leaving these interviews.
Moving on to PK, probably a little bit more guarded in some of his responses or a little bit more cliche. And, you know, that's what football is in a lot of senses. But there was something that he said about the defensive tackle group that they brought in that really boded, I think bodes well for the season. And we already thought that was going to be a good area for him.
Yeah, in general, it just sounds like they're in very good shape, which is the thing you had to see from this group is that they were all coming in well. But they're so deep right now. It's something I just posted on our website. It's just how they have this kind of hockey line going on where there's 6-7 dudes who are coming in and being able to play in rotation. You look back at the years past, and it was 3 to 4 guys in 2023. In 2024, it was 4. But you saw how tired Alfred Collins looked at the end of the year. You saw how tired Vernon Broughton looked at the end of the year. That's not going to have to happen because these guys are only going to be playing 35 snaps, even your very best ones. And yeah, I think specifically it was Cole Brevard, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the guys he shouted out as just someone who's instantly come in and made an impact. And Kenny Baker talked about him more, which we might get to later. But it seems like that's the one where he's the most outwardly enthusiastic. He was a little bit smug and just kind of like, I've been doing this too much for most of the questions, especially about like the defensive backfield and things like that. But I think he really wanted to talk about the D-line, and that's something that they're excited for and one that you're going to see be better than maybe some of the national guys who aren't as familiar with the team are saying.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those, well, are they going to do it again? And you can look at some of those bodies and think there's a good chance it'll happen. So before we keep going, going to show some love to our sponsor, that is Lux Kitchen and Bath.
This video is brought to you by Lux Kitchen and Bath. Lux has been offering high-end kitchen and bathroom remodels for 3 generations throughout the greater Austin area. With 5-star review after 5-star review on Google and Facebook, and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, you can put your faith in Lux Kitchen and Bath's award-winning designers and skilled craftspeople to bring to life that dream vision of your special home. But that's not all. Lux's all-star team provides full remodels, large additions, and even commercial build-outs as well. So call Lux Kitchen and Bath at 833-358-LUX today. Or visit luxkitchenbath.com to discover where quality meets luxury and begin the process of transforming your home. Get a free quote today by calling 833-358-LUX. That's L-U-X-E. Or by visiting luxkitchenbath.com. Link in the description.
So we did get to talk to all the other assistants. And used to, that was just 10 coaches, and you'd get safeties and corners, but you can get a little bit more now. You have an assistant quarterbacks coach. You have an edge coach. You have a nickels coach. Let's start on offense. There's obviously a lot of focus on Arch Manning. That means there's going to be a lot of focus talking with AJ Milwee, with Mike Bamonte. And both those guys really commented about how, and we hear it all the time, but it's just, you hear it more and more often, you know, you take the last name off the jersey and Arch Manning's a competitive, talented player who is trying to lead the team and trying to show his teammates what it takes to win at a high level.
Yeah, and it's just the, everything we've been reporting and everything you've seen online. I think it's been almost overplayed to the point where it used to be this like, oh, he's his name is what's carrying him, and now it's, man, this guy's so much more than his name, even with the sponsorship deals and all of that. It's so obvious that they would see the same player if his name was Johnson compared to being Manning. He's just going to be so good for this Texas team, and I think that's exactly what Bamonte is the kind of guy you bring in for, is because, hey, we have this really, really special talent. Obviously, Quinn Ewers is a special talent. Manning does it in a few more ways and can maybe throw the ball deeper, run faster, things like that, just more athletic in general. And so you already had Millie to kind of make that base of these really strong quarterback groups. And then Bamonte is the kind of guy who can actually scheme it up for you and help Sark, because every coach, no matter how great you think of them as a play caller, is going to make mistakes. And I think that's what Sark is trying to alleviate as much as possible. I made this mistake last week. I need a few more eyes that can tell me what went wrong, what to do next, and also give me a different opinion. And I think that's why that group is starting to come into its own really well.
I was really impressed by Bamonte. We'd heard from Sark that that was someone that they did not want to lose. And I kind of asked him the question, like, look, I'm not looking for you to say who came after you, but how important was it that, you know, not only with the rule changes and having more on-field assistance that you have this opportunity, but that Sark made this opportunity for you. And he was very, very honored. And this is someone who played for Kyle Flood, played quarterback way back at Rutgers back in the day. And he enjoys the chance. And I think H.A. Milwee's the same way. You recruit hard so you can coach these good players, and those good players are going to help you. A.J. Milwee's probably not going to be here forever, but at some point in his career, he's going to have, I coached Arch Manning and Quinn Ewers on his resume. He's already got play calling. He's already worked for Saban. He's worked for Sark. It's going to turn out really well. They're trying to get the most out of that, and Bamonte was someone I think that kind of exemplifies that, that little aspect of it. They also talked about Matthew Caldwell bringing in somebody just to be able to steady the ship, it sounds like. Milwee talked a lot about how the quarterback room before Caldwell was brought in remains young. Trey Owens got some, you know, handoff action. KJ Lacy's a true freshman. They did not want, if something were to happen to Arch Manning, to maybe rely on a championship season being put on the shoulders of a redshirt freshman or a true freshman. But that doesn't mean that Owens or Lacy couldn't beat out Caldwell. They brought him in for competition, but it sounds like they were very impressed. And I didn't get to ask this, but like, man, you got three people from Alabama in Milwee, in Caldwell, and now in Lacy in that quarterback room. It's a pretty funny yellow hammer dynamic. I didn't get the chance to talk too much to either Chad Scott or Chris Jackson, but curious what you may have picked up from talking to them.
Yeah, I got about a half conversation from Scott, and I mainly targeted my question towards Jarrett Gibson, because that's the one who's kind of intriguing to me, because, you know, when you were talking to Eric on our lives about 5 months ago, he was going, I think Jarrett Gibson has a chance to be the number one for this team next year. And now it seems like at least a start, there's two guys firmly ahead of him in Weiser and Baxter, but Coach Scott is very happy with where Gibson is, specifically physically. He says that he called Jarrett Gibson over his vacation and said, hey, Jarrett, how you doing? And Jarrett goes, I'm dominating right now. And I believe that was in reference just to the weight room. I don't think they're playing anything, but he used the word, I am dominating, which that kind of swagger to him is what you kind of felt with Gibson at the start of the year, especially that Michigan touchdown. It felt like there was something coming together. And then what really was the fumbles and his inability in the pass game. And Scott said that, hey, like, if you're asking for one thing I want to improve him, which is kind of my question, I think the big thing is the passing game. He doesn't catch a lot of passes. He hasn't shown that in the past. I want to see him do that. And I kind of inferred that it also kind of meant with the pass blocking, hey, you need to be able to sit back there and stand up a linebacker, which is something that you're really confident with Baxter and Weiser, maybe not so much with Gibson. I think there's reason to stay confident in him being able to play a decent bit this year, maybe still with how well Baxter's progressed and how hard it is to get Weiser off of that number one spot, maybe not him being in that top two, but he and Clark are still going to be important players for this team. And that's really nice to have 3 and 4 instead of 1 and 2 only for this past year.
And I'll even go back to special teams real quick. when Baxter and Clark were lost for the year, Banks said that he and Sark kind of look around and go, we can't have any running backs on special teams. We can't put these guys out there. Maybe that's where Gibson is able to earn some reps in addition to carries, and guys like Ricky Stewart and James Simon are able to make a little bit of an impact as well. Looking over on the defensive side of the ball, I got to talk to Dwayne Akina, and that's someone who knows how to hold court, and he's been doing it for 45 years. He's cracking jokes about the lost Dodds and contracts and things like that. But one of the big things I talked to him about was, look, there is a reputation that Dwayne Akina at Texas had basically for kind of doing his own thing. That's kind of how things went awry for Manny Diaz at the end. Granted, I think Akina has, as weird as it sounds, like he's grown since then. He's been to two different places. He's come back. And I asked him, you know, not matter-of-factly, but like, you came here and there are a lot of different ways to do things. You kind of had your preferences with how you coach defensive backs, and you've seen PK use different ways of coverage. You know, what are you here to try to help with? And he made a good point. He goes, look, I'm not here to figure out what coverages we use to help with pass defense. I'm trying to see how we fit the run first. And last year you saw Texas very, very often disguise from two high looks with Makuba, with Taff, bring one in the box, you know, make things work that way to help guys out. We'll see what that looks like this year after having a lot of success and having corners like Barron and like Muhammad, where you could kind of trust them on their own third of the field when you had a slot corner in Gilbo who, didn't give up big play or gave up some plays, but never gave up big plays, kept guys in front of them, and what that's like and how it affects the run defense. But he said, like, look, and I think this is a very, very good point and a reassuring one if there's still some people who are concerned about what Akina may have done in the past. It's like, look, this isn't broke. You know, I'm not here to change everything. He also knows Johnny Nansen. He's known PK. He's like, I'm here to add, you know, my experience and maybe a tweak here and there, but I'm here to help coach the way they want me to coach. And that feeds into the coordinator continuity, which I think we talked about is something that helps players know where to be a little bit better, helps players trust each other, builds continuity on staff, just working in the office with guys. But it also is good just because, okay, this is your way of doing things. Here's how I've kind of come up and helped out. Here's some different ways we can look at it. But I think the fact that Akina said, hey, this isn't broken, I think that should be very reassuring. I got to talk to Alan Clark, and I think he understands that Ethan Burke is going to end up being a leader. Colin Simmons, he's going to push for being a leader. And then we got the big tidbit from Clark that Brad Spence is full-time at the weak side edge at that buck position now. So we did get some – these guys are usually kind of coy with info, but we did get some info there. But one of the things is Clark is extremely confident in himself. And as someone who was basically a pass rush instructor and a great one at that, because he rattled off some of the best, you know, defensive ends in college football and budding NFL stars that look to him for help. He's here not just to, you know, help Texas. And, you know, I think, you want to help the brand if you're wearing the brand as a coach, but he's here to show that, look, I can do this. I'm a coach. I'm more than just an instructor, and I can keep moving forward in my career while helping the Longhorns too.
Yeah, and I think I see some of these hires. Like, I really enjoy my conversation with Kenoto Hudson, who's the Nichols coach. Some of those are a little bit more – we need a little bit more help on the back end, and I want some expertise but lesser of a voice in the locker room because he's with Dwayne Akina in his room. But I think Clark is an example of one where it's, hey, we need someone that's going to elevate this into an elite status of players, and you have that ability to – you can take over in some things. And so there's a chance – you know, this is just pure speculation – he might have said, hey, I want Spence. I want this talent to come down to the edge group. And they had the ability to because he lost Trey Moore to the linebacker coach. We also heard that PK said we want Trey Moore to play linebacker. It's more what he's going to be in the next level. And I think what that comes down to is, of course, Spence is going to come off the edge. He's still going to play a little bit off ball because that's what the buck position does at Texas. They're going to be forced to cover. But I saw some people talking about what it means for Zeno Mayazulu, who's now kind of that number five in the group. He's a third string jack. And I think it really just means that no matter who gets injured ahead of him, because it's probably going to happen, one of these top four edge rushers with Burke, Fawcett, Spence, and Simmons is going to get hurt. he's just going to come into that role. If it means he's going to be the number two buck, he's the number two buck, number two jack. Either way, he's going to play. But think about what this group now means. Spence, Simmons, Fossick, Burke, Umezulu, and then still freshman Lance Jackson, and sort of Justice Terry. He's more like a base DN, but also going to be coming in as a pass rusher. How elite that is. And when you have someone like Clark backing it, you know you're in for a good season.
It sounds like they're very excited about the prospects of Terry as a third down option this year. Going to start at Jack. Still listed at 268, which seems impressive for someone his size to be that weight. But thinking of Justice Terry playing Jack and getting a lot of opportunity on third down is exciting. Anything else from looking at the list? Johnny Nansen, Kenny Baker, or even Mark Orfe?
Yeah, I really liked my conversation with Baker. He's just a fun dude to talk to. He really does love football, and you can kind of get that gamerism out of him. I wrote an article about it, so I'm not going to go too in-depth, but just talking about we talked about this hockey line shift thing that I think Eric specifically said it in some of his articles about this D-tackle room, and he really embraced that idea that, like, hey, we have our ones, our twos, our threes, but they are all going to play. I don't want my defensive tackle to play 60 snaps, and that's what ended up coming back with Collins. And then I talked to Orfe as well. I didn't get a chance to talk to Nansen. And it's obvious that someone asked him about it. Like, hey, you now have two defensive coordinators and three people in your own room with Hudson and Akeem. Like, what's that like? And Orfe it's pretty obvious, like, it's different. Like, this is not something you're used to. You come from Rutgers. That's not what it is. I'm the head of it. But he's a young guy. He has a really good grasp of how he likes his cornerbacks, the kind of guys that he wants out there playing. Was super complimentary when I asked about Warren Roberson, which is a pretty huge development this offseason, and said, I really want my guys to play on the special teams. That is something that I really want to see. And that's why we talked so much about Grayson Littleton. He was talking about how Cade Phillips maybe is a special teams player, but is one of the most pure cornerbacks he's ever had as a recruit. And that's just awesome to hear about these redshirt freshmen and true freshmen and guys like Roberson who are really stepping up and going to be the future of this cornerback room. I think that's in really good hands with Orfe and Akeem.
I think the young player aspect where a lot of the mention was on special teams, but there is mention of what they may be able to do this year. Littleton mentioned basically more than anybody else, I feel like, today as far as freshman goes. Cade Phillips, like you said, Lance Jackson, Justice Terry, and then Bo Barnes. You know, these are guys that they have very high hopes for. It makes sense when you're part of a number one recruiting class. We'll probably see them make some tackles. And, you know, when Quintrevion Weisner got his shot in 2023, it was on special teams. And, you know, he had some injuries guide him into that number one running back role, but they probably wouldn't have trusted him if it weren't for those plays he made on special teams. And we've seen, you know, just the way that can boost players into big-time roles. Leonga Lafau, Ty Anthony Smith, we'll see if that type of thing works for those types of players, Lance Jackson as well. So
yeah, if you want to be, if you want to play as a sophomore, you play special teams as a freshman. You've seen it time and time again in Texas and at other schools. That's your best chance to get there. And the ones who are the highest rated recruits, you see pretty consistently going down the list, going to play special teams, going to play special teams, going to play special teams. They're going to play as sophomores, and some of them are going to be starters. And that's an important part of how this offense and defense works.
And of course, you know, if they're three-year talents, might as well play them right away. What good are they on the bench?
No fun redshirting.
Always fun to track that type of thing. We get to cover camp tomorrow. So make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We'll have immediate reactions tomorrow afternoon, just around this time, actually talking about what we saw at camp. Going to be just helmets on, so no real pads popping quite yet, but looks at depth chart, looks at players that we haven't seen in burnt orange before, different takeaways, Arch Manning, all the same. Going to be a lot of fun to cover. So make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, head to InsideTexas.com. And of course, if you've not done so yet, season preview, Thinking Texas Football from Paul Wadlington. Get his 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. We have the link in the description. Every player, position, every opponent, SEC team. We'll look at the college football landscape, and then a look at a lot of these 2025 class members who may be making some impacts this upcoming season. So a lot of fun. Great time of year. Evan, thank you. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time on the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel, powered by InsideTexas.com.